Hazy completely led me down the wrong path again. You told me that this Borat stuff's funny. I'm telling you, I watched that. It's the dumbest. It's the dumbest 2 hours of anything I've ever. That is the worst thing I've ever watched.
That doesn't surprise me. You have no sense of humor.
Did you watch it?
No sense of humor. I have not seen the second one yet. No.
You go ahead and watch that tonight. I'll pay for it for you to watch it to see how dumb that is. And you call me and you tell me that there's anything dumber in life than that 2 hours of whatever.
I guarantee you won't get that call. Like, I don't need to see it to know that I'm going to like it. I may not like it as much as I like the first one. The first one is spectacular and Borat the character, like in the Ali G show back in the day, is just outrageously funny. It's one of the truly great comedies of all time, the Ali G show.
High five.
There he is, with Ali G and Borat and Bruno. Like, they're just, all of them are ridiculous, outrageous, offside, not politically correct.
Yeah,
but you're allowed to laugh. I think we're still allowed to laugh at times in 2020. I think so.
Well, just laugh behind closed doors.
Right. You don't want to offend anyone because you're laughing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but it
did you watch it, Jamie?
I did. I mean, as I predicted, and I told Brian this on this show, I think you were off. I'm not sure how it would go over in today's world because, you know, some of the things he says and does are not politically correct. So, you know, they're sometimes cringeworthy because you're like, oh, I don't know. But ultimately, that's his thing. Like, that's what Borat does. Like, it starts off right away, like, it's political, right? There's a picture of Justin Trudeau in there. He goes after the whole thing. It's,
oh, yeah, he gets
you
hit.
It gets hit. It goes after everyone in there, put it that way. So I wrote to Brian on the weekend because I knew that he was going to watch it and said, I liked it, but I thought it was a touch political where I was like, you know, people are going to have a problem with it. So,
but what do I care what other people feel about anything?
I
don't, go ahead, be offended, don't watch it, I don't care, but I'm allowed to have my own sense of humor and allowed to react whichever
Agreed.
Way I choose. I couldn't care less how other people respond. So
Agreed.
You know, including yourself, oh, like, that's too bad that you clearly have a distorted sense of humor, but you know, that's your
dude,
issue.
You know
that's
me, you know, I like to laugh, you know, I find stuff funny, but this is, I watched this, I thought to myself, this is the worst 2 hours of anything I've ever watched. I don't find that funny at all.
Well, playing a character, if it doesn't catch.
Right. Jamie, could you understand how I could have thought that while, like, watching
yes.
that?
Well,
maybe the first one was funny, but watching this one, I was like, man, this is flat out garbage.
Well,
anyway.
You have to watch. Like, I think you should never watch number two without watching number one to see
what the person's all about. Never. Never. I'm glad
you know
I watched it too then. Cause
okay, let me ask everyone a question. What is a better sequel? Like, name me a movie where the sequel's better than the original. It's not happening.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, maybe action movies, you could make that argument. But with
comedies. Like Die Hard with a Vengeance instead of Die Hard,
right.
You know, something like that.
Yeah.
I get that. But, like, I'm talking, like, Dumb and Dumber. Remember Dumb and Dumber-er or whatever the hell that was?
The worst movie ever.
Horrible. Yeah, a comedy trying to go, like, Austin Powers, the second one was pretty good.
I thought that was pretty good.
Pretty
I will
good.
Say that. Yeah.
Wayne's World 2 isn't bad either. Like, Wayne's World 2 is pretty good.
there's,
you know,
some good
with,
ones. Like, there's ones that are parallel, but like, I'm saying, like, it's rare. Like, Borat 2 is not Borat 1, but it's along the same lines of humor. So if you liked one, I thought one was hilarious. I thought two had some funny parts. That's all. That's all as far as I'll go.
Sure.
But, like, one was hilarious because it was so shocking. And you know, he loves the nudity stuff, and there's a guy running around there, the bigger guy.
The fight scene in the hotel room, you gotta see this from Borat 1.
In, like, Borat 1,
It is just, the guy's got no gear on, and there's...
Clip it and email
there's
it to
a Peter
me,
Jacobson moment.
Yeah, it is. There's
Borat,
a roasted turkey.
Borat's snout is nestled
there.
Somewhere, and it's a problem. And then the guy's running through the halls. Like, it's hilarious.
Yeah.
But, again, if it doesn't catch, if someone's playing a part, like, you know, comedies...
Okay.
You don't get it. And if it's not your thing, then you're going to think it's awful. I totally understand that.
I had an awful experience the last couple nights because you guys know I love to watch, movies on the side and all that, whether I'm working out or whatever. So on Cineplex.com, you can rent movies. And I've rented a couple. Well, two nights in a row, I've had awful, awful experiences. And just one was with Alec Baldwin, and it was the worst movie I've
ever
seen.
Which one you're talking about, Improper Murder or something?
Yes, yes.
Oh, my God, is that garbage?
So are you picking at random noodles, or did you choose yourself?
I bought it for $4.99.
Me
and
too.
It's something Imperfect Murder. And it's with Sienna Miller and Alec Baldwin. And I thought, oh, that looks pretty good. It was 71 minutes long, and it is the worst movie I've ever seen.
Yeah. All it is four guys come into her condo, and they shoot the breeze, and then she throws a guy in a trunk and into the water. And I was like, that's garbage.
Well, don't tell the whole story. But
well,
anyway,
no, there's no going to watch it. Anyone, based on this Siskel and Ebert review, I mean, this is one star for both of you.
It is the worst movie ever. And then I went and read the Rotten Tomatoes. Even people were like, this is the worst movie. There were 30 reviews.
I don't trust the online, though. I don't trust the reviews. I never trust the reviews. Because a lot of those are slanted as well. Like, oh, this is a little bit too edgy. Well, that means it's probably funny. But you don't want to give a quality review for it. Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline, here's Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst. How you doing, Ray?
I'm good. Now, you guys are talking about a movie made, like, recently?
Well, yeah, it says 2017.
It's garbage.
Because you run out of movies, Noodles. You're a movie guy.
I know, but this one, it's actually been either re-released for 2021, and it's 71 minutes long. What movie is a brilliant movie at 71 minutes long?
That's tough. That's very tough.
That's the length of Saturday Night Live.
Exactly. And it was red rotten. I kept waiting for it to turn. And it was just
my life too.
The end of the movie, I was like, I'll never get that 71 minutes back, ever.
Ray, I got to ask you something. Called you up and said, me and you are going to tee it up tomorrow, and then it was with a person who you were not really familiar with, and then I called you and said, look, man, I can't make it, but the guy really said he was looking forward to see. Would you still go without me?
Depending on your recommendation.
But you know the guy. You're familiar with the guy.
Oh, I thought you said, like, it's through your setup.
Yeah, but you're very familiar
with
the guy.
Yeah, well, do I like the guy? I mean, you can be familiar with a guy and or it depends.
Well, the guy doesn't necessarily like you. I mean, that's a part of the context here as well.
It's Darcy Tucker, and he doesn't really like Hayes, but I don't know.
He doesn't like my on-air persona sometimes. Right. He doesn't appreciate some of my opinions over the years, and he's not alone. So you and him would
What happens if Darcy gets out there and in the fifth hole he's like, hey, now, I know Hayes is a jackass on the air, but he's not a bad guy.
Well, that's what I'm banking on tomorrow morning, because I'm going to be there.
Or he might look and go, do I have to watch this swing for 13 more holes?
That is also a concern. It's at his course, and if he's dialed and I'm choppy, that's probably not going to help the relationship out. But O's the one that pulled all the strings, and then he's like, yeah, you're still, you know, we're good to go, but I'm not coming. I'm like, well, that's what does that mean then? Like, you know, like.
So maybe the real story is O's just tired of playing with you.
Well, no, I'm not. Exactly. I'm not. I have adulting to do. Like, I have financial stuff to deal with, lawyers, condo closings. I'm busy.
Okay,
and I literally.
So why did you set this up? Like,
it was a possibility. It was a possibility, and we were looking to play this week. And Hayes got us out at a goat ranch, and we played there. And then this really wasn't an option. So then it actually became an option, and I said, look, I'm not driving back out there again, but Hazy probably will come. And then Tux and the other guy were like, tell Brian to come.
Yeah, I'm there. I'll be there tomorrow.
Yeah. I knew you're like a 10-year-old. You're like, well, you know, my wife might have to work, and I don't know. And I knew it was a lie.
No, that was 100% the truth.
It wasn't.
It was 100%
the truth. It wasn't.
You better not go there and suck, Hayes.
Well, that's exactly. That's my problem. I'm gonna chunk one. We saw a guy today. Oh, my Lord, did we see a setup. This was a 20-second delay between, like, over the ball and pulling the trigger, right? Like, 20 seconds if it was a second, right? Oh, like,
he's standing over the ball?
20 seconds getting in the zone, and
he was eye-screwing the ball, eye-screwing it.
He topped it twice, and then finally just picked it up and said, I'll drop one out there.
And, like, would you not say it's somewhere, like, okay, by the second time, when this is happening? Are you not kind of under your breath, but just loud enough, go hit
come
it?
Come on. Yeah, come on, Pally.
No, like, just, you just got to go.
This guy, the evidence in this guy, what he was doing out there, was in the proof was in what was behind him. Two guys in a cart, and there was a foursome of old dudes walking right up the rear end. You know, because I, as soon as he topped it, I look back, I go, I saw them all coming. Just older dudes with walking carts. I'm like, they are right on their tail. That should never happen.
No, it's so true. If you're a twosome in carts and a four-pack walking is behind you and right on you.
You need to get a new hobby.
It's a problem.
Well, I will say this, though, that like at our course, there's a couple of groups, older guys, and they play so fast. Like, I'm not even sure if they hit the ball or if they're just there walking around. Like, all no matter where you are, they're like, they're there. And they hit, nobody misses a fairway. They all hit it about 175 or 80 yards. It's like polo. They
yeah, it's money.
Walk up, boom, hit it, boom, boom.
Yep.
Two putts, and they're on the next tee. And you're like, holy smokes, man, these guys are fast. And you're like feeling a little pressure. And they could care less. If you're slow, they're like, and these guys, they're like, eh. No, we got all kinds of time. Where else have we got to go? They're giving us one of those, except they're right up your ass every time you turn around.
Right. Their discrepancy between scores is like three shots at most every day. It's the exact same thing. 82,
yeah,
83,
for 30
82
years.
For 30 years. Yeah, it's money. Yeah. Anyway, we were talking about this signing with Galchenyuk in Ottawa. And whenever he comes up, the 2012 draft follows suit. Like, we brought it up in the last hour, and immediately people started tweeting it. Like, how about that 2012 draft where that was Yakupov 1, Ryan Murray 2, Galchenyuk 3, Griffin Reinhart 4.
Wow.
That's got to be the worst top four in draft history. Like, it has got to be.
Well, I can't imagine that you're going to, you know, you're going to challenge that. I mean, yeah, you know, Ryan Murray's a serviceable guy who's been hurt forever.
Poor Where guy. Did he just get traded? Sorry to interrupt. Where did he just got traded somewhere?
Did he go to Carolina?
I can't. I'll have to look it up. Like
you know what? New Jersey, sixth or seventh round pick, like a later pick.
You're right.
But you know, I was doing the Oiler games then, and Yakupov was, or doing a lot of them at that time, and Yakupov was the number one pick, and yeesh, like, you know, like he played like he was chased by bees. And like he was like,
that's the best description of a hockey player of all time. He plays like he's being chased by bees.
It's busy. He's going fast. He's going. His arms are moving fast, and like nothing's happening.
Yeah.
And so, and then Galchenyuk, remember, he was like, he blew his knee out at the first part of the year. He missed most of his draft year. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did he miss? Did he play at all?
Yeah, they were teammates in Sarnia.
Galchenyuk was hurt. I want to say he played like 15 games.
Yeah,
I don't even know if he did that.
Yeah, he barely played that year. Yeah, he barely played.
And so remember Montreal, that was their big center, and then they get him there and they go, wait a minute, this guy can't play center.
Well,
not only can he not play center, he doesn't want to play center.
Exactly. Oops. And Morgan Rielly went fifth to the Leafs, and Rielly had the same issue. He blew his knee out, right? And he barely played, I think, his draft year.
Now, from that line that you hear every draft, and you go, man, these GMs are just, they're full of poop every year. Berkey said, we got the guy that we had ranked first. And everyone's like, yeah, right. He's fifth. Yeah, as if, he was 100% right.
Yep,
like, clearly Morgan Rielly was the pick.
Oh, absolutely. Of the four guys in front of him, like you obviously, you wouldn't make a trade Morgan Rielly for all four of their careers combined. Like,
no.
And you know what's great? Morgan Rielly and Griffin Reinhart played minor hockey in the same hockey club. Like, they played together all the time. Griffin's dad, Paul, and Andy Rielly, Morgan's dad, they coached the teams.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Like, they were together.
Would you say this is the last shot for Galchenyuk? It's got to be. I mean, I'm surprised he's gone on to another team.
Yeah, I have to believe so too. It's like nothing really happens when he's out there. And so I wonder at what point, he's not fast, he's not aggressive. I know he's got a good shot. He came alive a little bit, I'd say, at the end in Minnesota, but man, with the guys out there, I don't know that he would have been the guy that I would say, hey, you know what? he could maybe give us a pop of offense. I don't think I would have thought that.
Right.
No. I guess this is an example of a high pick continuing to get chances, but he's not in Montreal anymore. So
no, but it's a low-value signing, too, $1 million.
Yeah, it's worth a shot. It's worth a shot. But, he's got to take advantage.
But I guess after a while you go, like, is there even, like, what's the potential for some reclamation? Like, or is he going to get, in an 80-game season, is he going to get 7 goals and 5 assists? I'll go find somebody else then. But, man, he's I was surprised. I didn't even know if I looked at that and I went, oh, I guess he was going to sign. I was kind of just, it was kind of an odd thing to even see.
You know what? The only thing I could think of when I saw the signing is I thought, okay, it's not a term deal. It's $1 million. You could throw that away, based on not a lot of money relative to everyone else. That's when I thought of analytics. Is there something that they see? Like, is there some, underlying number that they like, or is there something like that's where, sometimes off the top of our head, we'll look at a player and go, you know what? I don't see a lot there, but maybe they value something that they think is a reclamation project. I don't know. Like, that's,
or they're just trying to round out their roster to put some NHL guys in there to support those young guys.
It's a good point. Oh, like, they need to continue to add. If you can't force feed all of these young players into the lineup if you're Ottawa. Like, you've got to allow them to grow too. And
but you've got to add the right vets, eh, Noodles?
Like, I agree.
You got to add the guy who he might not be what he used to be, but man, he's somebody that you can rely upon. You can count upon to hold somebody accountable a little bit at practice, like to go up and, smack Tim Stützle in the pants and go, hey man, we got to get working here. We need more. And Stützle looks at him and goes, oh, yeah. Like, he's kind of fallen asleep as an 18-year-old. Like, is Galchenyuk going to do that? I mean, it doesn't appear to. So that I think would be the other thing. I mean, as far as the analytics, I don't know. Maybe they called Kevin Cash. And they said, should we sign him? And he's like, yeah, sure.
Yep.
That's the robot where I was himself. Going.
Kevin Cash is just a whipping boy. And nothing's going to change. It's only going to continue to develop. I mean, we're really in the early stages of analytics and analytically driven game planning. But it's too bad because they have no payroll. They don't have an overwhelming amount of talent. And yet, he got them to Game 6 of the World Series. It should be a triumphant moment, even in defeat. It should be, wow, what a managerial display. But it's not now. It's just, I can't believe you took out Blake Snell. How could you do that?
But the crazy part is, of the crazy parts of it, is that twice in the last 2 weeks, they have had starting pitchers go through and get into the third time through the lineup. Charlie Morton did it in Game 7. Of the last series, and Tyler Glasnow did it just a few days ago. Mm-hmm. And so the three hitters coming up, when the ninth hitter got the base hit, I'm watching, you see him pop right out. I'm like, don't do it. And of course, he's coming out, and he'd struck out Betts and Seager
and
Turner six times in a row.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. And the thing about analytics, of course, is because there's a game plan and you're looking at numbers and past experiences to predict future performance, and the guy they bring in's given up a run six games in a row. Well, it was perfect because he gave up one for 7 games in a row.
Right. Where are the analytics on that? That Nick Anderson's coming in and he is ice cold.
Here's the thing I think I came up with analytics and why they can't be everything. Analytics don't have eyes. They have no eyes. And so last night, whether your numbers say, hey, Blake Snell's never gone 6 innings this year, last night he'd thrown 70 pitches, and he was dead money. And the analytic took him out of the game, and on that night, this guy had it. Maybe he doesn't have it all the time, but on this night, you have to look at it, in my opinion, and go, man, this is not a robot. Some nights he throws 70 pitches, he's all over the place. and we got to get him out of there. Not tonight.
No, he was feeling it, clearly. He was feeling it, and it didn't matter. That's what I think has to be aggravating if you're a Tampa Bay Ray fan. And if you're a manager in baseball, you know, now, like, you're not allowed to necessarily make a call or have a pulse or even have a gut. You know, the Jays went through it game one. Shoemaker came out. It was just, that was the plan. Shoemaker's coming out. And he was lights out as well.
You know, you can plan for it, and I see why teams do, and I see what they're trying to accomplish, but there are so many variables into a game that I think you have to let the game breathe a little bit. As you're there, you're going to have to make decisions that you might not make all the time. It's not a total randomness. It's, you know, because you still have your plan, but on that night, that day, it was not the right thing. I'll tell you the telltale moneymaker for me was after the game when they asked Betts and Bellinger and Sager about it, and all three of them said, yeah, man, I was surprised he came out.
Yeah, and thank God.
Yeah, yeah. When the other team is saying that, probably not the best idea.
No.
Yeah, they made it abundantly clear that their eyes were lighting up when Snell came out of the game. And he didn't want to come out either. I mean, that's another part of it.
Oh, that was clear.
Yeah, that was very clear. And there are guys that know themselves, know their bodies, and know where the gas tank is at. And it's like, you know, I know I'm humming, but I had to really dig deep for that last one. Get me out. And that was not the case. And that's another shame, you know, here, where, and this is what we were talking about earlier. It's not only the managers that are, you know, victims of analytics, which is a bit heavy, but it's the players. Right? Like the players and the game we used to watch and game we grew up with, all that kind of stuff. It doesn't matter. I mean, sports evolve and they continue to evolve and they always will. But 20 years ago, a guy in Snell's position, an ace, game six, rolling like that, even if the manager was coming out, he'd put up the stop sign and say, don't even think about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Don't even come up. Don't even get close to this mound. I am not coming out.
At the very least, he'd be asked. Like, do you want to come out? Not give me the ball.
And now it's not. It doesn't matter. It's we've decided you're out.
Jack Morris tweeted in something yesterday, and you remember he threw that 10-inning shutout. Mm-hmm. Could you imagine if the manager was walking out there in the sixth to tell him he's throwing too much?
Never.
He would have taken him down with a figure four leg lock. Like, there's no chance he was coming out.
Jack Morris is
times, man.
Yeah, he's the guy with the big mustache, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Grittiest looking.
He looked like the manager from Major League, didn't he?
He looked like Lou.
A dead ringer of Lou Brown. And like, I think he works in a car shop during the offseason.
Wow. And if you remember, the one game there where the old-timer was on the mound, Lou left him in Major League.
Ed Harris.
Yeah, give him everything you got, Ed.
Yeah, you got to trust the old cagey veteran in those situations. Didn't happen last night. And the Dodgers, they benefit from it. How about that Justin Turner story, too? I mean, that is one of those, you know, exclusively COVID stories where I find myself stopping because I'm like, wait a minute. He's a grown man. He's 35 years old. He was told this is the way it's supposed to work. He should follow those rules and protocols.
I do feel bad for the guy, Brian, because this guy turned himself into a real good player. And down the road, when you're going to talk about this guy, what are you going to talk about? You're not going to talk about world championship. You're going to say, that's the guy with COVID that ran on the field.
No, exactly.
It's brutal for him, man.
And that's what
I'm
saying.
And he did it to himself.
He did it to himself, but it's also this idea that you win a World Series, you're 35, you've been in the league for a decade plus, you've been at the World Series three times with the Dodgers, you finally get it, and someone comes to you and goes, no, even though you feel 100%, no symptoms, and you've been playing. No, you got to go sit in that corner.
I hand it to Major League Baseball because they started out like a bunch of doofuses and they finished like a bunch of doofuses.
Yeah.
They looked like donkeys at the start when they had no plan, and then Manfred had screwed things up 14 different ways, and then they start and the Cardinals are 15 games behind everyone because everyone had COVID because a bunch of guys went out to a restaurant and ended up contracting the virus, and then they get to here. This is the thing that I look at with this. Well, two things. One is, in the bubble protocol, How can you let a player start a game with an inconclusive status? Like, he was tested prior, and they had an inconclusive test. Well, that would mean you've got to wait, I would think, under normal protocol. You would have to wait until we get that result back.
Yeah, you're out of the game. The game will continue, but you can't play.
Like, that's just – it's like a guy pulls a hamstring. He goes on the 10-day DL. After 8 days, he goes to the manager. He's like, I feel great. He's like, yeah, that's good. I can't use you for 2 days. Like, there's a rule to it.
Right.
This one, it seems like, and if you watched Manfred, my interpretation was he was like, oh, boy, he's paddling now. Like, he was not comfortable trying to come up with how that timeline worked because it was a mess. The second thing is when that Turner's been in L.A. long enough, you would assume he had some kind of relationship with the PR department. And so that PR guy in a bad spot has to probably go to him and say, Justin, if you take one more step on the field, this is going to be bad.
Yeah.
Like, man, we just can't. Like, he just plowed right through. He's like, yeah, to hell with everybody else and to hell with the protocols. I want my picture with the trophy and celebrate with my guys. And I totally get why he would want to do that. I totally get it. It just was wrong.
I know. It was wrong. And for all the guys that were outraged and saying this guy should be banished to death, they had to be competitive and win a world championships, as dumb as this was, I don't think they have any understanding what that moment would be like because, I don't know.
Well, to be told
everyone's
that you're
so disgusted about this. And it's bad. It's bad news. But
yeah,
you think of the competitiveness that goes into that moment and the elation. You're the top of the mountain, and you're just, I guess you just tell somebody to buzz off. Not the right thing to do, but, man, it would be tough not to do it.
But Major League Baseball, they had to separate themselves from him today. Like, they did that.
Oh, the day ever.
No, they're burying him, and he's going to get clipped. Like, he's going to get suspended. He's going to get fined. The Dodgers are going to take a massive hit, too. You have to. Like, what's the point of having rules and protocols, even if they're goofy and it seems like they're almost just winging it? There was a protocol. Came back positive. You got to go. He didn't. He fought through security. Went out there. You're gonna have to chew on that. And I'm sure now he's willing to accept it. You know, whatever. He's probably like, I don't care if I don't play the first 100 games next year. You know.
Yeah. And now that everybody else has got to sit around and wait to get tested. I mean, you would think that, everybody would be a little bit nervous anyway. For
absolutely.
Today, I would be.
He was right in the middle of it all, right? They're all out there doing their thing.
Pictures,
so.
And kissing the cop.
How about Major League Baseball? Not only did they throw him under the bus, then once they got him under there, they were rolling back and forth on top of him.
Oh, yeah. There were speed bumps and everything. It was a full-fledged bus-throwing operation. Anyway, we'll leave it there. We'll do it again tomorrow at 5:05.
Talk to you later, Hayes. Do not screw up the foursome tomorrow.
I won't. I'm there.
Play with confidence. Don't try to be the funny guy and tell a bunch of jokes. Just play.
Nope. Just
I think you can pull this off.
Business. I will keep you posted. Okay?
I'm looking online for the scores.
All right, buddy.
Okay.
I'll let you know tomorrow. There he is, Ray Ferraro, TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Red Tag Days continue with rates from 0% and free winter tires with every in-stock new vehicle purchase in October. MapleToyota.com.